Thought Leadership from PwC's National Office.
If you look at the financial statements and usually an implementation of a new standard there, on average, companies get typically around about 7 years to prepare for, to get ready, and then to be able to report. And that's from the standard coming out through exposure draft comments, passing to a standard, and then implementation in terms of adoption. If you contrast that in this space around sustainability, you've now, for example, with the CSRD, we're already now in the first year of companies needing to report on their information.
Today, we're back talking ESG. This is PwC's Accounting Podcast. I'm Heather Horn, and thanks so much for joining us today. If you're part of a company that operates in multiple jurisdictions around the world, or even if you're just operating in one, you've likely already started your journey to compliance with the upcoming CSRD reporting requirements or potentially other mandatory requirements around the world. However, bringing all of this together poses numerous challenges, from data gathering and scrubbing to establishing sustainability reporting policies and getting assurance ready. To help us better understand the current state of how companies are navigating overlapping requirements and the path ahead to future reporting, today I'm happy to welcome Alan McGill, PwC partner and leader of the Sustainability Reporting and Assurance Practice for PwC UK. Alan brings decades of insight and lots of hands-on experience to bear on the emerging landscape of sustainability reporting. He's got some great advice, so stay tuned for our conversation. Alan, welcome back to the podcast. So nice to have you on again.
Fantastic to be here with you again, Heather.
Thank you. So I think one of the number one questions we're getting beyond what am I going to do is what am I going to do because I have more than one sustainability regulation that I'm dealing with now, given the proliferation that we've seen. And so I know you have been talking to a lot of clients about how they can operationalize all these global reporting requirements and really make changes to the business process so it's not just sort of held together with paper clips and tape. So one of the goals of CSRD, I think, is beginning to happen. But maybe we should just start off with a quick reset. And then from your perspective, where do we sit in the landscape?
Yeah, sure. Look, it's a really exciting time, but it's a very complex time at the moment. You have got those three very large, big regulators who've all now put a very firm stake in the ground about the regulation they would like to see coming from companies. Those three regulators are the US in terms of the SEC, from an EU perspective around the CSRD and the reporting regulations associated with that. And then from an international perspective, the ISSB and what it has done through the, you know, basically the formation of its two standards, the IFRS S1 and S2. So you have now three big regulators all asking for more information. So it's very clear to organizations that the direction of travel is we want more from you, become more transparent around your reporting. The key thing, though, is unfortunately at the moment that all of these regulators want certainly different things in different ways, and therefore not quite the reporting. Whereas at the moment, when you compare that to financial reporting, broadly, everyone reports in the same way in a consistent basis, which aids that comparability. Now, the other thing that the regulators are clearly trying to do here is because, you know, reporting around the sustainability or ESG agenda, it's not new at one level. It has been around in companies and organizations have been doing it for a very long time. What they're trying to now do, I think, is to improve the quality of that data, to improve the quality of the information, to drive then the consistency in the data, and to set ways in which that information is going to be measured and now reported. So that's, I think, a really good step to aid, you know, investors' use of this information to make it decision useful. But it is very complex. There is a wealth of new reporting requirements out there, many of which a lot of organizations have probably never, ever engaged with before. And therefore, they're going to have to move at speed, because the one thing that all of these regulators broadly are not giving very much time to is that implementation, if you like, roadmap. They're regulating fast, quickly. They're bringing in those reporting requirements. Companies haven't got a lot of time to be able to respond to that. And that obviously has complexity within it.
Well, and I think when you add to that, you know, when you think about the ISSB and those standards, then you see Australia considering them, but with a twist, Canada, Brazil, like all the UK, these different countries, but maybe putting their own spin on them. And then in the US, you have states like California, where companies are going to be subject to reporting. We see Illinois and New York also looking at it. So not only do you have to understand all these frameworks, but you have to keep up with all these changes that are being made.
You're absolutely right. And they've all got different time frames. They've all got, let's say, different reporting requirements. They all affect companies in different ways. And that's just, you know, a really complex picture for companies to manage. And is one that they have to then do very, very carefully, because, again, it's not just about information to be reported in their main, you know, group accounts in that, you know, that sort of mainstream filing document. It has very big implications for a lot of the statutory reporting they may do within the group.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's quite a change from how a lot of reporting has been done in the past.
Well, and it's so interesting because you mentioned financial reporting, and even in financial reporting, we have two systems, IFRS, US GAAP, big, and then there's lots of local statutory gap that, you know, is generally aligned, but you have the basics all look the same. And even in that case, there was recognition many years ago, we would have been better off in some ways. Some people may disagree, but if everyone had just moved to one system of financial reporting. So now, clean sheet of paper, we've come up with, you know, three at least major different sets of rules and standards. And in fact, in the SEC hearing to adopt the rule, and I won't get this exactly right, but they basically said, we want U.S. standards for U.S. companies and U.S. investors. So they missed an opportunity there to say, yes, we're going to accept these ISSB standards. And we're also not seeing equivalency where someone's saying, okay, I'm going to accept a different report. Everyone's saying, no, I want my own. Although California has some, but there's a lot of limitations on it. So how are you hearing companies sort of react to this sort of messy landscape?
Yeah, I mean, you would have hoped that as part of that coming together on the financial reporting side, and as you say, be it, you know, US or IFRS, that we'd have learned some lessons around how to do this from a non-financial reporting perspective. Unfortunately, it looks like we've gone right the way back to the start, and we're going to start with every country having their own basis on which to report. And that equivalent of a sort of a US GAAP reconciliation note coming back into accounts as you move mm-hmm. from one set of reporting in one, you know, jurisdiction to another. That's really sad at one level that we didn't learn, if you like, from those lessons. But at one level also, to some degree, maybe understandable because different jurisdictions are moving at different speeds. So what it means, though, I think in the short term to maybe the medium is that mm-hmm. companies are going to have to deal with that complexity. So they are going to need to prioritize. They are going to need to understand what they need to do by when for the different jurisdictions. They are going to have to think about how do they make sure they don't overstretch as well, because with so much to be done in such a short period of time, if they don't plan properly, mm-hmm. if they don't start early, and I'm probably going to say that quite a few times as we talk to each other,
yes.
That if they don't start early on planning for this sort of thing, then they are going to find themselves overstretched. They won't be in a position where they can probably report, you know, on time or in full. And that's going to lead to potentially quite a number of possible qualifications that come through if there's a mandated position around assurance. And that's quite an unusual place, because if you think about, again, financial reporting, there are very, very few qualifications that you ever really see from right. a financial audit and the opinion that gets issued.
Well, so from that point of view, then, you know, if you compare to a financial audit, the timeline and the scale is completely different when you think of implementing a new standard. So what does that really mean?
Yeah, I mean, again, if you look at the financial statements and usually an implementation of a new standard there, on average, companies get typically around about 7 years to prepare for, to get ready, and then to be able to report. And that's from the standard coming out through exposure draft comments, mm-hmm. you know, passing to a standard, and then implementation in terms of adoption. And at the same time, whilst you've got that long runway, you've typically got quite a established set of, you know, financial accountants and auditors who know about this sort of thing and how to implement, have got the experience, the skills, the knowledge, done it before. They're all there ready to go, if you like. If you contrast that in this space around sustainability, you've now, for example, with the CSRD, we're already now in the first year of companies needing to report on their information. And I'm only really aware of a very, very small number of companies who've actually determined what it is they're going to have to report at the end of this year.
Mm-hmm.
So that time frame that has existed before with lots of people and resource available is not there in this way, in the same way that, so you've got much shorter time frames far fewer people and resources, people with skills and knowledge, understanding about what they need to do in this space. So that's why I said earlier, start now, start mm-hmm. thinking about what you need to do. Because for some of these regulations, even though they may appear to be a number of years out, that time is going to go very, very quickly. And you need to be able to establish the right governance. You need to establish the right sort of systems, processes, controls. Because again, with a lot of the mandated assurance over this data and information, that quality is going to be looked at very, very closely.
So I know you're spending a lot of time working with clients. And in general, as you're talking to companies, how does the scope of, let's use CSRD, because it's the most clearly expansive, compare to maybe what they were reporting previously voluntarily? Are you seeing there's 25% overlap, 75%? And again, I know this is going to change by every single company, but just trying to get some general sense for companies who haven't started to dig in, how big a gap they may be thinking about there?
That's a great question, because the gap is absolutely huge. It's as big as the Grand Canyon. Most companies will typically have sustainability reports that are on average about 20 to 30 pages. A number of KPIs within there, but you know, not a huge number. You're maybe talking, say, 20, 30 sort of, you know, key KPIs. By contrast, there are some companies who are out there who have gone through their double materiality assessment process, the DMA, have identified that all 82 of the DRs, the disclosure requirements, are considered and deemed to be material, and have now got to report on about, you know, just over 1,000 data points in terms of that information. So it's an absolutely huge increase in the amount of information. And indeed, I was looking at one company's accounts from a December 23 year-end reporter, who sort of adopted, you might say, a little bit early, mm-hmm. some of that CSRD reporting requirements.
Yeah, like
requirements.
A CSRD light or flavor type
exactly.
of report.
Well, and their annual report has increased by 130 pages. So the amount of information that is going to be disclosed, the additional narrative reporting that is going to come in, is going to fundamentally change, you know, the look and feel of a set of annual report and accounts and that mainstream filing document. So again, companies need to think about how they prepare for this, get ready for it, put the right governance in place. How do they start to collect that data and for the information they're going to need to report, the systems that they have in place, the, you know, the controls. And those are all things that they are doing at a time when they are probably quite resource constrained. Mm-hmm. There's still some challenging economic conditions out there in terms of trading. There are other economic headwinds around, obviously, can I get the right people into my business? The whole advent of sort of AI technology, mm-hmm. that tectonic plate that's coming in and hugely impacting businesses, which is going to see, again, a lot of additional transformation. So, you know, there's never a good time, you might say, to introduce, you know, key amounts of regulation. But there are, you know, significant other headwinds that companies are all trying to deal with at the same time as implementing this.
Well, yes. And if I think about it, so climate, own workforce, even, you know, some of affected communities, governance, some of those, at least people can get their head around what that might mean. They might have already been considering some of it. But there's some of the other topics like biodiversity, circular economy. I was just talking to Tom, the agent, about circular economy. And I had done a quick quiz to people, what is circular economy? People that I would consider relatively more knowledgeable, they are not relatively more knowledgeable. And so
Absolutely.
When I think about that and think about all of these companies needing to then assess not only what this means, but what it means to their business in particular, it feels like there's a huge knowledge gap as well.
Absolutely. And therefore that knowledge gap does need to be filled. But I do think that as companies go through and start to think about things like biodiversity, for example, then they will start to get a lot more value out of what's going on to understand the business better. Let me give you perhaps a good example of that. I'm aware of a pharmaceutical company that sells a particular drug of which revenues are $4 to $5 billion, you know, per year. So quite significant. Mm-hmm. They've been going through as part of their analysis, because they're caught by the CSRD regulations and looking, and therefore at you know, E4 around, you know, biodiversity. They've worked out that for this particular drug in question, there is an ingredient that they basically need to make the drug. That ingredient comes from a bark that is grown on a tree that only grows in basically Chile and Argentina. Now, two things are impacting that tree species down there. First is climate change. Mm-hmm. And the second actually is the move to sort of, you know, beef farming in that area where they are felling, you know, large
Right.
parts. That is putting now significant, huge pressure on this tree and, you know, basically its existence. So it has now become endangered. This is putting at risk this life-saving drug and the ability to manufacture it now. So by going through that biodiversity consideration to understand the impacts of how things like climate change, land change use, the raw material itself, that, as I say, that key part that comes from the bark, is now considered to be a fundamental problem in the ability to continue to manufacture that drug going forward. Another example, around perhaps something like water use. You know, there's a very large drinks company that currently at the moment, it states within its annual report and accounts that one third of its packaged production is currently done in water-stressed regions where its plants are. Now, again, with something like climate change, water availability, that is likely to probably increase in terms of a risk to the business as water stressing becomes even bigger an issue in terms of the availability and the quality of that water that they can get hold of. So that is going to put now, again, significant pressure on that package production, those revenues, that profitability of that organization, and the ability for it to meet future expected growth in demand for its product. So these sorts of issues are now becoming fundamentally important to understand that value creation model, the ability to sustain that financial profit stream of the organization, the impact of the financial statements. So you can see again why perhaps the regulators are wanting to move to provide that sort of information to the business and to investors and to other stakeholders as to why this might help you better understand those risks, but equally those opportunities. Because the ability to transform the business, the ability to use this data and this information to provide new insights to the business, to innovate, to do things differently, is a fantastic opportunity for any organization. So again, I come back to start early, start now, start looking, be inquisitive, be curious, look at all this stuff, understand what's important, work out what you need to do, build a more resilient business model, supply chain, customer base, and you'll continue to be successful. You'll continue to make profits, but just in a more environmentally and socially responsible way, perhaps.
Well, and it's interesting to make that point because if we rewind to the beginning of CSRD, again, thinking from a US thought leadership perspective, one of the big points we're making is that it is intended to drive change in behavior. It's not just reporting versus the SEC will definitely say they are not trying to change behavior, even though there still could be some change. And maybe we'll talk about the SEC rule for a moment at the end of the podcast. But if you think about it, then you are reiterating this message of this is not a compliance burden. This is not just something for the financial reporting people to, you know, in their spare time, which they probably have none to the point you made, to be trying to figure out, okay, how are we going to get all this data? This is a true business imperative to deal with these issues. The reporting is just sort of an outcome of that. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you'll find initially is because of the weight of new reporting requirements that come in, a lot of businesses will be just somewhat caught, if you like a rabbit in the headlights of, I just need to be able to comply and get the reporting done in that perhaps that first year of implementation. But the whole point is to try and drive a more sustainable, you know, planet and business and operations and society. So as companies start to look at this information and as they start to drill into it and look at the insights that the information is providing to them, they will start to change the way in which they do things. And that will, as I say, I think really drive the innovation agenda in these organizations. New products, new technologies, new goods, new services, new ways of doing things, delivering things, deploying things, you know, working with others, et cetera, et cetera. So all of that is just going to be completely unleashed as you get insights around this sort of information that these, you know, this is going to provide to you, which, you know, has got to be a good thing at one level, one hopes. And we'll just make, you know, I think the importance, therefore, around the broader value creation becoming much more important to companies in terms of how they center themselves and how that informs their decision-making processes.
Yeah, so companies that you see doing this well, what are some of their characteristics?
So they're certainly trying to understand the entire value chain much better. Lots of organizations talk about their value chain and their upstream and downstream activities, but they don't really know quite what is beyond that first tier of suppliers in terms of who they've got that legal contractual obligation with. As you start to try and understand that better in terms of that, those, you know, the broader areas of your supply chain, of then, as I say, you know, also what's going on from a downstream perspective, that can start to influence the way in which you do things, how you might source things, the way in which you might set up your procurement department, the way in which they think about how to decide what to do in terms of when to procure, how, from where, and so on and so forth. So a lot of that, again, transformation can occur in different ways in the business as they start to just look at things very differently. Again, coming back to the drinks company I mentioned earlier, you know, they basically buy a lot of aluminium cans to put a lot of their product into. They have obviously that relationship with that first tier in the supply chain. They've never thought about going back to the organization that's extracting the bauxite out of the ground, where that's coming from, where they get shipped to where that aluminium smelter is, what that aluminium smelter is doing to create the aluminium that then is extruded to make the can, and what their customer does with that can when they finish, you know, consuming his product.
Right.
So as you start to open up, you know, that whole value chain, which is a really critical part, for example, of the CSRD reporting requirements, to understand the value chain, to think about what the impacts are, the opportunities are within that value chain. That is opening companies up to sort of information, to insights, to areas of the business it's never really probably engaged with before. As it starts to do that, it can think differently about how it does things. So again, a real opportunity to really understand a business in terms of actually, you know, what are the key, you know, critical points within it, and what can it influence? What's it depend on? You know, in terms of those, you know, those key, you know, inputs to the business. So again, an amazing opportunity to transform and do things differently.
But let me go back to your example that you gave at the beginning of a company that has identified all of the reporting requirements of the CSRD to be material. So now it's, when I listen to your drinks example, I was like, this is great. You can follow their supply chain. There's probably opportunities. Maybe they change how recycling. There's all of this, right? But then if you multiply that by 80 different supply chains that you have to think about, or if you're a large multinational, hundreds, how do you see companies just dealing with this sheer volume of work that needs to be done?
So it's definitely going to be an issue in the first probably two, maybe even three reporting cycles, because you just can't cope with implementing that amount of change that quickly and get it all right. So again, I think it comes back to sort of an understanding of really what is going to drive the most value in the business. You've deemed a lot of these things to be material because you've gone through that process, you know, and as a result of that, I think you'll also then see companies coming together in different sectors and industries, and to some degree that sort of agreement between the industry as to what they do really believe to be material. Because some organizations will have a different point of view. They will come up with a different set of KPIs and disclosure requirements that they think to be material. And that, I think, will engender a debate in the sector, within the industry, then may see a change in the sort of information that is going to be reported. So that will allow companies again to focus in on some of those other areas and drive the real impact that they can, again, in a positive way. I think as you set up better governance, there'll be better oversight, better monitoring. You will move away from that sort of compliance mentality of I'm complying with the regulations I need to report on. As you start to monitor, you then might start to move from that into sort of, well, strategic direction. How do I really improve on what I'm doing here? And how does that add real value back to the organization? So it's going to take time, though. It's not something that will be done overnight.
Yes.
It's clearly going to be something that will need to be worked on over a number of reporting periods, again, over time. And therefore, it's that classic sort of iterative journey that a lot of organizations are going to find themselves on.
Well, you raise an interesting point about industry groups, because I do think that there is an opportunity there to help each other within boundaries, obviously. Are you seeing industry groups come into play here, or are most companies, for the most part, sort of going it alone a bit?
I think it's probably threefold in terms of the answer to that. So the first is, yes, absolutely. I am seeing some companies come together to talk in industry and to sort of agree in certain areas. Of course, they have to be careful about how they do that because of competition law, et cetera. But equally, I see other companies who are just, you know, head down. We've just got to get on with this. Let's get on with our own process. And therefore, you know, they're forging ahead. The third part actually is, as well, is some of them are going, well, actually, these are, for something like the CSRD, the sector agnostic reporting requirements. There is that what's called the set two set of indicators coming, which in theory will be industry specific, where, you know, there's about 40 different industries that have been identified through the EU in terms of what they're proposing to do, where they will then bring out sector specific reporting requirements. So you sort of hope that when that happens, they will go through a process that will engage the industry and the sector so that everyone does agree that those are important KPIs or disclosure requirements to report on. So in some ways, I think they're still trying to, well, let's just deal with this set one stuff, get on with it. You know, as I say, start early again, report. And then as the other information comes out in terms of set two, let's see how we refine and we go from there.
All right. And then also, again, going back to 1,000 points of data, the sheer volume of data and trying to manage that. So put aside the actual underlying business that you might need to make business change and otherwise, and just say, okay, year one, I just need to get all this information together. What are you seeing, again, best practice companies that are dealing with this well? And that's just CSRD. And then I'll ask about the broader reporting environment.
Yeah. So look, a lot of companies already collect a lot of information. So whilst there will be clearly potentially a large number of data points to report, I think some of those, they have the data already. Might not be quite cut in the way that you're required to do from a CSRD perspective. So you may need to change some of that and slice and dice, you know, that data that you do have in a slightly different way, but they'll have some of that data. So what you're seeing is companies, as they're starting to determine what they're going to need to report, well, what have they got and where's the gaps? Where are the gaps in the data that they don't have? As they then determine and identify what those gaps are, they're then going, well, how do I now go about putting in a system to collect the data that I now need to report on? That's where, again, I think technology is going to play a really important part for going forward. That's going to be challenging in your first year. It always is in terms of how you set that up. But thinking about that for the future, again, I think is a really important aspect of future-proofing the way in which this reporting can be done efficiently, quickly, and aid then obviously is also, you might say, the assurance of it in terms of the right sort of controls being put in place over that data and that information to, again, make sure that not only is the company collecting good data, but the ability to then audit it and get it assured, you know, most efficiently, and therefore, again, reducing the overall cost burden to the business, again, I think is a really important thing. Not enough is probably being done at the moment, I think, by organizations around the thinking that they need to do, for example, on that technology front. Let me give you a good example of that. Lots of companies obviously get their revenue audited, and the auditor comes in, audits that revenue.
Hopefully most, not all companies, yes.
Well, absolutely. And they audit that revenue and they come in. You know, what should be done now by that auditor is to say, well, I'm coming in to audit your revenue from the financial statements perspective. And I'm also at the same time going to audit it to understand how sustainable it is. So you can then report that information under the EU taxonomy reporting requirements as part of that CSRD reporting requirement. So the auditor comes in once, audits revenue, you might say once, but has a duality of purpose around actually the outputs of that, because it audits not just the fact that it's a, you know, it should be recorded as revenue, but how sustainable it is. And if, what does it meet those reporting requirements under the taxonomy side. So again, how can technology be deployed, not just to collect the data from the company's perspective, to give all of that information it needs, but also how can it be assured in that most efficient way again? So it's not just the companies that are going to need to think about what they need to do, it's the auditing firms as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a lot of pieces to think about. And in particular, if we think about data quality, and then I'll come to the audit. In financial reporting, if we go back to your example of the auditor coming in to audit revenue, you don't expect that the next year when you come back in, the client will say, oh, well, there's actually this other revenue that I wasn't thinking about. But if I think about carbon, that does happen, that they identify a different source of carbon, or they identify that maybe the emissions factors they were using were wrong. And I'm picking on carbon, but the same could be true for biodiversity and otherwise. And I think that aspect of it is very hard for people with a financial reporting background to get their heads around, because, oh my gosh, you know, the data we were using was not necessarily investor grade. So how are you seeing companies deal with that as they've been on this voluntary journey and move into the required reporting?
So I definitely think it's going to be a big problem, and it will exist for a period of time. Again, what I am seeing companies doing as with regards to the existing, you might say, ESG data that they have been reporting, maybe for a period of time, you know, a number of years, quite a lot of that is relatively established. And therefore, on that basis, it's not too bad. And therefore, you can get that sort of limited, what's called assurance, you know, over that data and that information. What I've seen, though, is that as companies are starting to expand the scope of what they're reporting, that is where they're becoming unstuck in terms of it's because, again, it's just more embryonic, you might say, mm-hmm. around you know, the information that's being reported. And that is going to potentially, therefore, cause the sorts of problems that you're indicating. So as companies move from reporting on their scope one and scope two data and information, move into that very tricky scope three area in terms of you know the entire value chain mm-hmm. again, then, yeah, absolutely, that is probably going to cause quite a lot of problems for organizations in terms of how they measure that, how they report on it. And therefore, I do think that you will likely see that restatements of data and information becoming relatively commonplace for a period of time as companies improve that data capture, the, you know, the recording and the information that's reported in this place. So that gives quite a number of challenges, therefore, to investors in terms of how do I use this information? Mm-hmm. Not just investors, but other broader stakeholder right. groups, regulators, you know, others, et cetera. And so, again, I think what companies need to do in this space is become a lot more transparent about just essentially disclosing why and what is going on with their data, why there are these changes that could occur, you know, 1 year to the next in terms of whether it is an actual potential error, whether it's a potential sort of change in the measurement mm-hmm. basis. Or again, whether it's actually just part of just group reorganizations because they're buying and selling bits of the businesses all the time. And therefore, that's why the data is moving in the way that it is and requires potential, say, restatement. But it's definitely something that organizations need to think about, again, very, very carefully.
Well, and I think, I mean, you are working with clients signing these opinions, limited assurance mostly, but I know moving towards reasonable assurance. So two questions. One would be maybe brief explanation for just our listeners' difference between those two, and then also how, as you approach the data, as you approach working with the company, some of the sort of key success factors you see companies doing well.
Yeah, of course. So, as you say, there are two types of assurance that are typically undertaken around this sort of ESG data, and again, indicated by both the SEC, for example, as well as the EU in terms of the assurance requirements that are placed upon businesses. So the first is what's called limited assurance. The second is what's called reasonable assurance. Now, the best way to think about reasonable assurance is it is akin to the level of sort of work, effort, challenge and scrutiny that you get as part of a financial audit. And so reasonable is equivalent to that in terms of, again, the coverage that you would normally expect to have of whatever balance you're being audited. And as I say, you know, looking at the controls and how the design and the operational effectiveness of those controls are over that data and that information. Limited by nature then is essentially a scaled back version mm-hmm. of that. So not as much of the year end balance or that you know, KPI is being audited in terms of a smaller sort of scope coverage. You typically only look at the design of a control and not the operational effectiveness. So it still gives a good level of comfort, but it is not the same mm-hmm. as getting reasonable. And as I say, both the SEC and the EU have indicated, well, certainly for the SEC, it's a mandated position to move to reasonable assurance, certainly for like a large accelerated filer, for example, in 2033. Mm-hmm. Or in the case of the EU, there is a recommendation to move from limited to reasonable assurance after a 3-year period of implementation.
Well, and in California as well, that there is mandated movement to reasonable
Absolutely.
Assurance for scope one, scope two, a little less clear for scope three.
Well,
but
yeah. And it's interesting because, again, if you look at somewhere like, for example, in India, so the Securities and Exchange Board of India, so SEBI, when they introduced their reporting requirements around the sustainability agenda, which actually is interestingly for March 24 year end, so literally now introduced in the year in question, they've gone straight in with reasonable assurance. So that is not only for companies struggling to work out how to gather the data to report, also having to go through now an audit at the same level of rigor as you get from a financial audit. So, wow, you know, those Indian companies
yes,
are having to deal with quite a lot.
Yeah.
And so, again, that's just a demonstration, I think, of how quickly some of these regulators want businesses to move. Again, start early.
Yes, that's going to be the quote from this podcast. So, Alan, let me go then to the second question is that as you're working with companies, again, companies that are doing this well, companies that are prepared for their auditors, what are some of the things that make a difference to the process of the audit?
Yeah. So obviously you've got an implementation date that exists for when this stuff needs to be reported by and potentially assured for the first time in terms of that regulation. One of the things that I'm seeing a lot of companies do, you know, across the world is to sort of engage with their assurance provider earlier than that first date of requirement. That might be that they're going through and doing what might be called a readiness review, which is to sort of start looking at some of that data for the first time. It might be that actually they've commissioned maybe some private assurance that they would like to go through the full process, but to report to management privately so they can understand what they need to do to improve, you know, those systems, that data, the controls, again, governance, all aspects that you would get as part of a, you know, a management report you get through the financial audit to understand how, again, you could improve that control environment. So there are absolutely different things that companies can be exposed to, that they can open themselves up to help them on this journey, to try and avoid, you know, as we just were talking about in the previous question, too many restatements, because by getting that assurance, that should give more comfort to management that what they're doing is moving them in the right place. Because you look at the one of the assertions, for example, around completeness. So how am I looking at all my emissions associated, you know, with, you know, with the organization? So is there the completeness of all those different emission sources, for example? So lots of really good things that companies can do, lots of good insights that they can get to help them, again, on this iterative journey that we all find ourselves on.
Yes, it has to be walking together on the journey. So I promised that I wanted to come back to, we've been focused on CSRD, although this would really apply to almost any of the frameworks. But I do think one of the complexities is the interaction in the frameworks, and we sort of started here. And as we're recording this, it's March 22nd. So we've seen in the U.S. that now the, all of the lawsuits that we were expecting have been consolidated in the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals. What happens next in the U.S., we don't know, but I think the advice we're giving there is you can't assume that that rule is going away. So you should be taking that into account if you're a domestic or a foreign private issuer. A lot of companies have ISSB standards that are being looked at in maybe different jurisdictions they're working in. They could have California. They could have CSRD. And as we started, those are all different. So how are you seeing companies just deal again with sort of this volume of information and almost, I don't want to say competing because they aren't competing, but it is sort of a competition for resource and otherwise to get all of that data and reporting done.
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, I think what I say is that I am seeing those companies prioritize resource now to help out. I am seeing lots of sort of, you know, finance departments leaning in to help you, what you might call that traditional sustainability department that have been perhaps historically responsible for all of this reporting. That, I think, is a really important thing for many organizations to have that buy-in and the lean-in from finance and actually, quite frankly, the wider business as well, the organization, to enable, you know, the best way forward for getting, you know, to the position they need to be able to report. By prioritizing them what they need to get in terms of that information, going through the different regulations and understanding the timeframes, companies are now working out what that timeline looks like for them in terms of how they then move forward for collecting the data that they need. But unfortunately, they are in this position whereby, you know, they are going to have to report probably different things in different ways to different regulators, again, based upon the jurisdiction in which they're operating in.
All right. Well, definitely a lot to think about there then. So, Alan, let's take this now and sort of zoom back out, because you gave us some examples of companies that are dealing with real business issues as part of their sustainability, I'll use the word journey. Are you starting to see change in the businesses, or are we still mostly still at the point of just trying to figure out where maybe change is possible or perhaps needed?
I think it's a combination of both. There are clearly some organizations who have been on this sort of change journey already. This regulation has come in. It's going to require them to report probably more information. And in some ways, it's just accelerating for them the change that they're already doing. So, you know, there are companies now looking at how they get, you know, deforestation-free supply chains. How do they have sustainable sourcing for all key raw materials? How do they, you know, halve the amount of productive land that they use to, you know, basically, you know, enable the business to operate and to go forward. So those sorts of things are already starting to come through. You can see the targets coming out. Many organizations clearly committing to other things like a net zero commitment. Often timeframes are quite long, but you know, you can see that coming through. And then there are other organizations that may not have been perhaps on this particular journey for very long, who are coming to it, you know, relatively, you might say, new, but are coming to it at a time when they're going to see an explosion in the amount of data that's going to be made available to them. So that hopefully means that they can go up some of those learning curves much faster than the company, the sort of the first group of companies I was just talking about, because they'll benefit from all of that learning. They'll benefit from the insights that come through, perhaps the sector knowledge, and therefore the way in which they can, perhaps transform and innovate again. So I think that, this is going to help, and it will be a form of competitive advantage for businesses that I think embrace it and look for that value creation aspect in it. Those that don't, I would worry about, because I do think that, if you have a couple of products that are put in front of you, one of which is environmentally mm-hmm. more friendly, more socially acceptable, perhaps relative to, the other product. I think when the consumer puts his or her hand, into their pocket and pulls out that dollar to buy, or maybe the credit card yes. to Apple Pay or whatever to go for, that they're probably going to go for that product that is probably more environmentally and socially responsible. So, and you can see as well that again, if you just come back to the EU, something like the Carbon Adjustment Abatement Mechanism, CBAM, that's going to bring in, mm-hmm. carbon taxes on certain industries now, where if you offshore things to, places where perhaps that energy is cheaper because it is brown, you're going to get taxes put on to make your price now look equivalent to an organization selling goods and services that is from clean energy. So, these mechanisms are going to come in, which is going to change that sort of, behavior of businesses. The consumers will become indifferent because of the price. Your point will mm-hmm. be the same. And so therefore they'll differentiate on a different factor. That's probably going to be the environmental or social one.
So definitely a huge challenge in front of companies. If you think of all the other challenges we're dealing with, just from a business perspective. So as you're talking to companies and maybe sort of to close things off, what are the sort of final words of wisdom that you would share in terms of how companies can be facing these challenges?
So the first thing I'd say is absolutely look at this as an amazing opportunity to transform and to be innovative. We have clearly had, you might say, the starting gun fired on the fact that we're moving into the next industrial revolution, mm-hmm. The transition to the low carbon economy. We know it's happening now and it's going to have to happen. And so therefore businesses know that they need to look at things and do things differently. So that's an amazing time to be, therefore, not just in business, but, in society as well, to see that transformation, happening in front of you. And as I say, be able to create new goods and services. That disruption, like any other previous industrial revolution, will mean that there will be winners and mm-hmm. losers. So the question is, do you want to be on the winning side rather than perhaps the losing side? So again, look at how you can innovate and change what you're doing in your organization. To do that, the only way you can do it is to get new data to look at how you do that. So maybe, as you said, the catchphrase for this podcast is start and start early. But again, start that journey. Start it as soon as you can. Don't wait would be the other point I would say.
Well, and I think the other point that you just made there is that often, again, people view this as compliance, this is a lot of work, and so forth. But the data you're getting from this actually is going to be possible to then help you drive this journey and give you this opportunity. Because if you don't know this information, it's hard to know how to manage it.
And this is the point about the fact that actually for the first time, if you do engage with this, you will start to sort of find things out about your business that you never knew about. Some things will be perhaps a bit shocking at one level. Mm-hmm. Other things will be, unbelievably, revealing and revelating. And as a result of that, that should drive the sort of desire to be more curious, to do things again in a different way and take the business forward. There's just so much opportunity out there. It's unreal for the change that is going to happen. And again, we probably haven't touched on it enough and you probably need another podcast, but at the whole technology side of things as well is going to play such a big angle in helping companies to move again at pace with speed, around, that decision-making process and what they need to do. That is, and again, I think only going to be something that can help in this situation. That probably wasn't there before because mm-hmm. again, the sort of issues around the climate and stuff have sort of been there for a period of time now. But the ability now to perhaps get hold of that information in a way that is user-friendly, allows you to look at it in the way that you can, that sort of the technology now enables, probably wasn't there before. So the ability to do it wasn't there as easy. That technology is now there and is developing at such a pace that the speed with which you can get to these sort of decisions now should be much easier.
All right. Well, it sounds like you just offered to come back and do a technology podcast. So I'm going to get that booked when we're done here. But anyway, Alan, it's always such a pleasure to speak to you. And thanks so much for joining me today.
Heather, thank you.
That's our show for today. Tune in next week for more fresh episodes. So that you never miss any of our audio content, follow the PwC Accounting Podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. And to stay up to date on all our latest accounting and reporting news, sign up for our newsletter at viewpoint.pwc.com. From thought leadership at PwC, I'm Heather Horn. Thanks for tuning in.
This podcast is brought to you by PwC, all rights reserved. PwC refers to the U.S. member firm or one of its subsidiaries or affiliates, and they sometimes refer to the PwC network. Each member firm is a separate legal entity. Please see www.pwc.com/structure for further details. This podcast is for general information purposes only and should not be used as a substitute for consultation with professional advisors, including accountants and lawyers.